the way they perceive the existing technology and how they're going to move people in a bio world, and what are their fears, and what exactly the expectations are. And this is what I've got from people who were involved in either migration, migrating mobile applications, or in the planning stages. First of all, they cleanly separate phones from the tablets, and they perceive tablets to be exactly the same type of the device as laptops and desktops. Nothing can be further from the truth. You can just look at them. There is no keyboard, and when the keyboard is on, it takes about 3/4 of the screen in some cases. The second thing is that the transition can go incrementally, which means that they can take one function and move it to the tablet and expect the user to be able to work on both platforms. There is also perception that at this point you can address one platform at a time. That was the case with iPhone 2 years ago. At this point, you have probably two Android devices for each iPhone devices in the phone mobile market. And the difference continued to grow in Android favor. You still have four iPad devices for each Android device or other devices in terms of tablets, but this is going to change quickly in the next year. And at the very least, you have to develop to four platforms: desktops, webs, web applications, and Android and iOS. And there are other platforms that are just coming, like TVs and BlackBerries. And to support all those platforms in native tools, you really need multiple teams of the developers. And the last thing is that people believe that the iOS application are fine. We'll see why it's not going to be so in 1 year from now, as we go through the projection of what is going to happen. But this is what is happening every day. You're walking in a bus, and you expect people to just run business as usual, and all of a sudden you will see devices like iPad or Android tablets or anything popping up, because they can accomplish so many things, from map browsing and avoiding the delays to counting the passengers. And as you sit on this 20-minute ride, you come up with probably 10 different applications, like to port the application that analyze your posture to see if you're tired, if you have to take a walk, and apply it to the bus drivers, and to actually see if he is paying attention to the road. So there are so many things that you can do with mobile application around us, and at this moment we are in the world where we have 3, 4, 5 devices either in our possession or we're cycling through them during the day, and we essentially want to be able to use multiple devices at the same time, and we want to transfer knowledge from one device to another, and not even knowing which device provides us with the answer. This is a small diagram of what people are doing. Apparently, 4 out of 5 people who are watching TV and have iPad or Android tablet is not paying full attention to the TV. They're actually playing with those devices while watching TV. And you will find more and more people using these devices as companion devices. For example, sometimes I don't use dedicated keyboards. I hate keyboard on the laptop. Sometimes I use external keyboards. Sometimes I can use iPad or Android as my pointing device. As we move toward large screen devices, those changes are going to be more profound. After probably 3 or 4 years, it will be difficult to find not touch-enabled keyboard or devices. At this point, even such popular devices like Apple Mouse are being replaced because they don't support touch enough. So they're basically replacing them with new models every 6 months at this point to support. And there is a whole new class of devices that is pretty much not perceived as a threat to computing yet, which is called TV, the favorite pastime. At this point, if you go downstairs, you'll probably find three or four models where you can run your AR applications without any changes on 50-inch screen. I think there is. Downstairs is about a quarter block from here. I saw one in the window this morning. But this is Samsung Smart TV. I think they have five or six models that are AR-enabled. And in order to deploy on this platform, you just take AR application. Package is slightly different with extra config file, and you can run Android. I'm sorry, you can run AR 2.5 applications right away. Google TV. Pretty much like what you did with Zip. The only thing is you need to add another config XML file. You have to make sure that you are building against AR 2.5, and you have to specify for flash content special string like configuration 13, something like that. I can give you the exact version, but I think I have a URL to the SDK that is used for TV deployment.
What device is used for typing into it?
You can use anything. I usually use this.
No, for the TV. I mean, the TV.
Yeah, I usually
TV
use this.
Right next to it.
You never next to TV. 15-inch TV. Actually, you're better off if you are at least 6 to 8 feet away. And I will have the chart that will explain how to measure DPI and how to measure the distance. But this is just statistics of what you can expect. With Android devices and with tablet devices, over this is the current condition. You can see that at this point, Android is roughly at 40%. Worldwide, this is just the United States. Apple is at 18% worldwide. These numbers are for the United States. It's pretty much like a political map at this point. Next year, when you will take a look at those charts, you will see at least three categories. TVs with Apple coming on with their own version of the TV sets. Next year, Google TV with Chrome that is capable of running Android application on it. And essentially Open Alliance that has been formed by Adobe about 2.5 years ago, which is running on every smart TV at this point. At least every major TV manufacturer is in that alliance, and they have full source code support from Adobe. You cannot get source code from Air or Flash unless you are part of that alliance. But if you are, or if you're working for these companies as a consultant or anything, you can pretty much have the full integration with particular version of Air and do native extension in that particular toolkit. So, what is happening with the major operating systems? Windows 8 that is going to come out next year is going to be touch-based. So essentially, whatever you consider as mouse-based interface, current-based interface is going to be out by next year, at least on the operating system level. iOS development is merging with OS X development, and we should see the same toolkits for development, both tablet and OS X application, early next year from Apple. Next year, you'll have BlackBerry devices. I've seen few. Those are still not QNX devices. By the first quarter of next year, RIM will have the new smartphones running on the Unix operating system, and I would expect the same operating system being promoted to some of the TV sets. And Android, I think fourth quarter of this year, the tablet version is going to merge with this phone version. They will require at least 2 core for new phones, and essentially it will become a platform that will drive adoption on the tablets with Android operating systems. So at this point, it seems like all major players are moving toward touch interface, consolidating frameworks, but still you have 4 platforms. There are 2 things to consider for enterprise developers. First of all, if we continue to develop applications as they've been developed with multi-window interface, mouse-oriented, and so forth, chances are that they will be looking strange compared to other applications, probably within a year or two, much less in time it takes to develop enterprise application. So we might consider new toolkits for development or conversion of the applications immediately. At this point, I wouldn't say that there is an option not to move to mobile platform in terms of the UI design, because it's going to prevail everywhere from mobile device to desktops to TVs. So why would you want to use AIR as a cross-platform tool as opposed to other toolkits? First of all, not too many other toolkits are available. You might get some benefit of reusing existing skills. Portability of the code across different cross-platform tools is usually lower than it is in AIR, because AIR has tiered application development environment, so the skinning and an ability to adapt are much higher in AIR application. And if you are on Adobe platform already, you might reuse some of the existing Adobe technologies more easily on the AIR. So what are the chances that any of those statements are true? In our experience, the first statement is partially true, because you will spend the first 2 months fighting with your existing skills, and then whatever you will have left will be reused. Reusing existing screen and components, you're much better off with a clean slate, honestly, and learning from the mobile and other frameworks than reusing your existing designs. Portability of the code, yes, that is something that I was really surprised when we were getting the new alphas and betas of Adobe. We were surprised how easy it was to migrate from one mobile platform to another. Usually it's negligible compared to development with native tools. And a number of things that are working at the mobile are growing every day, and a lot of things are being developed based on the modern technologies, including networking extensions that are specific to mobiles. So Adobe still provides very good stack in terms of in terms of screen rendering, networking, and additional packages for the application developers. So that was a motivational speech. Now to the bad part. When you're developing for mobile devices, you have a completely different spec. And one thing Victor says that you shouldn't use emulator because it takes longer. The second thing you will experience is that it won't give you true metrics of what is going to happen on the mobile device. What do you need in terms of CPU, in terms of memory? You have to assume that the performance of application won't be simulated at all on any emulator. You really need to get to the device level. And you have to start with the most powerful devices, because by the time you go into deployment, those will be like non-existent devices, because every 3 months you're getting new generation of the hardware hitting the market. You also have security issues that don't allow you to use the full functionality, as well as a lot of functions that you are taking for granted, like technologies that are ubiquitous in PC platform are not available or available in a very limited scope on the mobile devices. I'm not sure why it's here.
Are you going to elaborate on why the existing UI won't be available?
Okay, I'll try to use this slide for that. These are a few devices that you can consider major players in development of the applications. They have very respectable screen sizes, not screen sizes, resolution, like 960 by 480 for iPhone 4. Unfortunately, it's 3.5-inch device, so if you consider what amount of the letters of exactly the same size the UI will take on the regular screen with normal BPA is 320 by 210. Try to imagine to fit your application in that spot. I actually have to prohibit my kid to read on an iPad because he cannot even read it from this distance. He has to put it like right here, and it's really bad for your eyes. So don't even try to develop applications for iPhone or iPad unless those are applications that can be run on desktop in 320 by 200, 300 by 200. If you'll take a conventional tablet like iPad or Zoom, you're getting 800 by 535. Usually you need to subtract another 20% because you have to use bigger fonts because you'll get different lighting conditions. So when you take the browser, let's say through the Citrix, and try to break it down on this screen, you're getting approximately 30% reduction in the terms of size, and another 20%, about 50% of the size the regular application on the desktop would provide for the content. So you have to increase the font size, but at the end of the day, you're getting 50% of the screen at the same resolution that you would have on desktop. If you're thinking that your application can run in 6 by 400 pixels without any redesign, I would say it's a really well-designed application, but I haven't seen one. And it's even worse than iPad. So chances that you'll be able to use any type of the remote link or even browser to take existing application to the web is not going to happen. It might look good, but the first time you touch the screen, the keyboard pops up. And now out of your 50% screen size, you have about 15, because keyboard covers everything else. So the application have to be redesigned. When Victor was talking about voice recognition and the ability to enter information with voice, it's one of the choices that you have, and it works well in about 50% of the cases. What you really have to realize that your application logic, what he was explaining, that he has special callbacks that analyze the possible choices from the voice recognition and apply only the entries that would make sense for a particular device or particular field. That has to be done on pretty much individual field level. We'll be providing some of that code to the open source, but essentially there are approximately 50 types of the controls that need custom callbacks for data entry. And some of those issues are being addressed by native controls. I'll talk about them in about 10 minutes. So how do you develop UI if you decide to jump in this water sooner than later? you pretty much have the same business code as you used to have. However, two elements that are on the bottom, scenes and themes, start to play a very significant role in the way you develop and test the application. Let's start with theme because it's more debated topic at this point. Why people prefer to use native applications over mobile applications with cross-platform kits. And usually they say cross-platform applications look ugly on a native platform. In Flex, you have two levels on which you can do skinning. One level is called theme. That's how overall the application is going to look like. In the theme, you also have the skins for all default controls, being, let's say, dialogs, or being buttons, or checkboxes, radio buttons, lists, and so forth. When you switch the theme, essentially you say how all the controls from Flex framework are going to look like. All controls that are in mobile components, and these skins, those themes, are not necessarily have to be the same, even if they're the same on binary level for all the platforms. For example, there is a company called Par, I think it's a French company, that came out with Eskimo Toolkit. Essentially, it's the same code base. Let me try to run it. And the same application, the same binary that runs on. Let me.
You need to switch.
Yeah, I need to switch. But first of all, I need to start it. And where is the switch? I want to start it on both platforms. So regardless of. So I'm on one, so let's try to switch it to the left.
It takes a minute, takes a few seconds.
If it won't work, okay, let's switch to Android, I presume.
Let me hold one and you will be.
Okay, so on Android, the UI is not really very different from really ugly UI you have on Android. You pretty much have the same buttons, the same dialogs, like lists, multiple choice list with check marks and so forth. What I'm going to do, I'm going to run it. You want to try to show it? Okay. I'm not sure if it's going to show much, but let's say I'll pick up the list, and I will pick up the same multi-list. You can see here that you have native air controls. I'm trying to switch it to this. Let's see if I'll be lucky. And you can... Well, apparently we have moved them. So multi-selection is very much the same as you would expect it on an iPad. The buttons in the toolbar, they're styled exactly the way you would expect the back button look on iPad. If you'll go, for example, to standard dialogs, like containers.
So that's the iPhone theme applied.
It's just the theme, the same theme, being applied to different, to the same application. From the air perspective, it's the same code, the same theme. The only difference is that within the theme, you have an ability to define, within your media tag, the DPI for each particular skin is being applied, as well as the platform.
So the code is still different?
No, just the CSS is different.
Okay.
So in terms of default CSS that you would provide for the theme, you would have application DPI statements, and you would provide three kinds of the resources, or let's say buttons, or you would specify that for all platforms, for DPI 160, this is a font size for the button. But if it's iOS and DPI 240, then it's 11, and so forth. So you take the book on the design, on the guidelines from the operating system that you are trying to make a mock-up with, and you create CSS that will match all the sizes. Then you will provide the same verification. Essentially, you have the type of the operating system and capabilities class in ActionScript, plus you have application DPI property on application that allows you to find out in which DPI you are, so you can tweak the rendering of the skin on the fly. So essentially, it's the same code, the same theme.
It's a single code.
Single code. And the same application being deployed on iPhone 3, iPhone 4, and iPad will exhibit different sizes adjusted to the DPI transparently. And there are, of course, the classes that show you elements slightly different. For example, containers are going to be different, buttons will have different shapes, and so forth. So that said, with Eskimo, you will be able to add their skins, their classes, to the platform. They also introduce a number of components that are missed in initial mobile toolkit by Adobe, including things like date choosers, scroll lists, and so forth. So if you need to beef up your development, it's a good library to use. It's supposed to be open source. At this point, it's been distributed as binary, but chances are that it's going to be released rather soon. Adobe is also coming up with a new controls. They're doing this is a twofold process. They are adding native controls, and they're changing the way the design is being done, because once you apply the skin, actually, let me show you something different. Hello. I'm sorry. So let's say I will go to Eskimo and I will try to run this Eskimo on, let's say, simulator. You can tell that this is OSX settings, right? But if I will go back to simulator and say, okay, I want to run this thing, as Google Android, let's say on Zoom, you will see completely different UI that looks more like Android. So you will have support for runtime switching, but you won't have with the theme till Adobe releases the new version of the Eclipse plugin. You won't be able to do it in design time. Once they release it, they will do it with Catalyst. FXG files and support will be added directly to CS tools, but essentially you'll be able to test with different themes directly in the design in the Flash Builder. And at this point, Adobe is threading through the existing legacy controls, what they call them, and move to uniform platform or for the mobile, desktop, and TV. I'm going to just stop quickly on a few of them that are most important for the developers. The most painful thing you'll find out with application is keyboard input. And native platforms support a lot of things like soft keyboard that allow you to have different layouts and other things based on additional requirements from the field you are entering. Like, for example, for email, you want to allow additional symbols on the keyboard, and you don't want to say return, you want to have next button, like tab button, to go to the next field. So these elements allow you to customize text input to have all these attributes. Now the question is how the same control is going to behave differently on different platforms. And the answer is that because Adobe is using mobile skins and regular skins for different platforms, different skins, essentially these skins contain access to the native callback to the Air or Flash runtime that will bring up native controls. Of course, like you had it in the browser, when you have native controls, you will have slight problems with your order. In other words, you won't be able to put anything from your display stack on the top of input text because it will show through, it will be on the top. But essentially, you will get all properties, including, let's say, if you want autocorrection. One feature that I really would kill for right now in Air application, because every time I'm trying to enter my user ID or password, it tries to autocorrect it, and I'm ending up with completely unrelated words on iOS platform. So you will be able to specify how you want to modify each and every field. If you want to have voice recognition in it or other features, you can provide your own skins that will have calls to things like what Victor was explaining in terms of voice recognition and other things. And without any changes to the program itself, you'll still be using the same text input. By the magic of theme, you would be able to gain a lot of functionality. The second thing is related to the containers, like callouts and split view navigators. You've seen it in a number of native applications, when sometimes when you're going to a small UI, you will have just a button that allows you to have functions that are not often used or can be overlay functions. Those are called callouts. And sometimes when you have plenty of real estate, you will drop them on the side. So these controls are coming out, I think, in the... They're currently available, so they will be coming out in the beta in September, the beginning of September, for both Flash and Air. You will also see a number of controls like date, field, list, and so forth that will be really important for making the applications more user-friendly. But again, just because it's a skin, it doesn't really mean that you have to change your date field in the application to anything else. It just means that whenever you will use that theme, the UI is going to change drastically. What you may not use? Pretty much everything that you're using right now. I will explain why in a few seconds, but this is just to give you a little dose of reality, just to understand that it won't be a small change in terms of UI. In other words, it will be a significant change as it was to go from client-server with ambient interfaces to single-page browser. There are a number of reasons why you might not do that. We'll talk about them in details in a few seconds.
So what's left? What's left? Text box?
We'll get text box. I didn't put it there. Text input is now native, so you'll have to get used to the fact that you will define what functions on what platforms you want to enable there. It's much richer experience than you had before. You will have text with direct links to maps, You'll have direct text to list, direct links to dates, and so forth. It will go on the scheme containment level. And depending on the platform and the mode and how the computer will perceive you are working with it. In other words, if you're going to use touch interface, or if you're going to use voice or other things, it's going to change on the fly. Not only based on operating system or DPI, but also on the way you interact with it. So it's going to be very interesting. Again, it's completely distributed programming on the UI level, not on the server level, but on the UI level as well. We have to talk about native extensions because they're almost here.
You had a slide when you said that we won't be able to use the data to read. Are you going to elaborate on it?
In about 10 minutes, okay. Hopefully. But keep reminding me. So native APIs have been available for about a year now. They first been released to TVs, as I mentioned. So there are AR implementations of smart TV at this point. We'll see more and more coming out at this point. And the way it stacks out is you have to use these languages on appropriate platforms. If you don't have the implementation for a particular platform, you have to provide implementation on ActionScript, and it will be used as a fallback implementation. So if you are okay with ActionScript performance for some functions, you can put them as native extensions, and we'll just return something that no processing there or no capabilities there. But this is the set of the languages you have to have for some developers in your team. With an exception of Objective-C, fortunately, we've been working with this hands-on all the time. Objective-C, the last time I used it was probably about 10 years ago. But it's still possible. So about 3 days ago, beta of AIR3 came out. It comes with new ADT packaging tool that allows you to put those libraries in the packages and put them on the devices, pretty much like what Victor was describing. The only difference is ADT is done as the packaging tool instead of zip. And you have to provide additional XML files that will describe which library is where. I don't expect it to fly initially because I can imagine what is going to happen when you will tell that your AR application now contains a couple of DLLs with unrestricted access on Windows enterprise development environment, but I would expect this will work well for consumer devices like TVs as well as mobile devices. So what is interesting with this beta release is that they provide slip streaming. What it means is that, like in iOS, when you get complete executable, you're getting complete runtime being packaged along with your application, so they are guaranteed that that device is going to support all the features of that particular AR runtime that you're relying on. There are limitations, of course. For example, you won't be able to run AIR3 on Android 2.1 devices. But other than that, going forward, it is a great way to ensure that you have all the runtime on the machine available to you. And
there is still no AIR runtime for iOS.
Was in the beta?
For Apple.
It is in the alpha. You have to be on the pre-release adobe.com and you have to request it. So, but you can pretty much ADT tool will extract the runtime out of the existing toolkit. In other words, what happens there is the runtime is part of SDK. It's essentially an APK file It's getting prepackaged exactly the same way as Victor was saying, as a jar file and placed inside. So if you ever looked at how globals SWC is written, it's essentially saying, okay, those are SQLs that have to be implemented by the container. And whatever is in the container, you're just going to shoot there and get the response back, and this will be a global SWC implementations. So when you have slipstream packaging, you have a configuration XML file that says, okay, load those DLLs or load those jar files and initialize them. And from that point on, the container has to have those functions available to you. So from that point, it's open field for you. You can put anything, package anything you want there. No restrictions on usage of API outside of the manifest for mobile platforms.
Kind of pre-release list for latest release 4.5. A lot of people complaining about the speed, you know, the performance of running on the Apple devices. It's a different process, right?
It's complete nightmare in terms of do the build for slipstreaming. In other words, for normal application, it takes probably 3 or 4 minutes for us to do the build for iOS devices. Usually what you do, we have to start from the beginning.
Well,
Apple doesn't allow you to use interpreted code. I'm sorry, not interpreted code. Do runtime, just-in-time compilation. And it doesn't allow you to work in interpreted mode on the device. As a result, all the applications have to be slipstreamed and converted to the native code. That process is a nightmare. In other words, a regular application that is about 5 megabytes in AIR format becomes 50 megabytes for AIR and for iOS, and it takes about 5 to 6 minutes to compile. In terms of the performance on the device itself, I didn't hear too many complaints. The truth being told, Apple devices are not running at the true speed because they're trying to run cool and go to sleep as often as they can. And as soon as the temperature starts to rise, they drop the speed. So not everything is... It's exactly the same CPU on this and that platform. It's exactly the same code. Even Apple code is better performing code than the code on Motorola, for example. But the problem is that the CPU, the actual CPU speed, when you run for like 5 minutes, usually drops to 600 megahertz on iPad 2. The other thing is that we're using just one CPU on iPad. We'll talk how to enable additional CPUs a little bit later. So, what I wanted to show you. So, what I want to talk about is the real life experience, and then we'll have another lighter demo at the end. There was an application that was built, I think, about a year ago using Permobile Technologies. Was in one of the startups we worked with as partners. So we had an ability to use the full Adobe stack there. And the primary goal for that application was to automate back office procedures for insurance businesses, which is pretty much all about PDFs. So people would... go to the application. Let's start from the beginning. This is pretty standard for desktop application, multi-windows interface. You can see that there is one window already open. And to minimize, you would go into list, which is a grid. And I'm on my Ethernet phone, so the speed is beyond mediocre, and I don't think I'm alone. Somebody else is stealing the bandwidth. So this is just the retrieval speed that is kind of nightmarish. Is anybody else on Android Anatol interface watching movie? This is not good. Let me try to switch to a different one to see if it's going to help for a second. And then we'll go back to wake up. Okay. So what is it? Wait. Okay. So what you do in this application, you fill the forms, enter some information. We're not going far in terms of UI or functionality, so it's not going to be like demo, but basically you fill some questionnaires, put some information on the field. You try to minimize the amount of data entry, but not by much. For example, if I will, let's say, change the zip code, there are chances that we'll go outside and automatically change the information on the city and state, or if you go to the bank information by routing number, it will pick up other things. But at the end of the day, it just back office data entry, and once you entered all the information, you need to drop supporting documents. Okay. It will go to the server, hopefully recognizes it, and it will come back. What's going on? There are four forms being scanned and OCR'd on the server. While it's processing, okay. So it took a little while, probably the server is busy. But it sorted out and placed each and every document in the appropriate folders. So those were original documents. It cut a signature image out of the page, the signature image. So now they can do electronic signatures and other stuff. And once they're done with that, the second part that I'm going to show today in mobile environment is to generate, let's say, some forms. So let's say I pick up the same person. Let's pick up the first company. Let's say he wants to do a contract with New Connecticut, Fixed Life. The interface is ugly, but this is what you get when you're building dynamic interfaces for about 2,000 companies. That has to be fully dynamic. So if you'll pick up any of these forms, you can see it in PDF directly in the application. It's completely filled. You can process it. It will be emailed. So the process that usually took, let's say, 30 minutes can be done in about two.
And I can tell you for a second, when we started this project, that we are working for small agencies in insurance who come and sell you insurance. And they were driving in their truck carrying tons of paperwork. So all these documents, they come to you depending on what they want to sell, and in each state they would go to their truck and bring the actual paperwork for you to fill out. So all this you put in the PDFs and you scan, and everything is automatic. So it's tremendous. Besides what Anto was saying, besides the saving in time of processing, we remove the need of these trucks. And the other thing that we improved, this application is using web services everywhere. So for example, if you are an agent, and what may happen currently, not with our system, just the agent's license is expired, for example, in this state, and you don't know this, and he might forget about this as well. So whenever everything is We are filling out the form. We are calling different web services, trying to check public information that is available for people. And I don't know why Anatoly is showing it so quickly, the PDF. The PDF is also process very smart, in a smart way. In particular, we are using optical recognition. So the form is scanned, and based on the word, it tries to understand what kind of form it is, and it's saved appropriately in the database.
So that was, I didn't want to go into the business details, so let's switch to what happens when you try to migrate this screen or any other screen that we've seen so far to mobile devices. You can't. So what you end up doing, you start with a complete redesign of the UI. Let me show you.
Why you can? Why?
Are you saying that it is made to work on mobile devices? It should also work on tablet?
I will explain why in a few seconds. Let's start from the beginning. The grid. Question from the director. Why can't you put the grid in the mobile devices? First of all, you don't know how much space you're going to get. These two devices have 20% difference in terms of the horizontal space. They also have difference in vertical space. They have different DPI. In order for you to provide a similar experience, you come to realize that you cannot ever specify the width on any of the elements that you are rendering. It's going to be DPI device dependent, and you have no say beforehand on at the design time of what it's going to be. You cannot have pixel perfect design by specifying the entries. You can have perfect picture perfect design if you don't. Let me start this application.
One second. In this particular screen, think about it. Look at these chat boxes and rows. People are using fingers now, right? How are you going to hit that checkbox? You're going to most likely going to hit the other one that you didn't play, unless you are a baby with small fingers, right?
Don't even try it on
use
iPhone.
Use pencil sharpener.
No, this
it doesn't
done.
Work.
For the fingers?
Yeah.
The touch won't register unless you hit at least 14 by 14 area. In other words, if you have very light touch, it won't register by most of those sensors. They explicitly request you to really press. So let me see if I can switch this.
Besides that, who wants to see the screen like this in my iPad, for example? You have an old-fashioned drop-down box, right? The combo box. Mm-hmm. Can you imagine showing something like this on iPad? People see different look and feel, right?
Right.
But you're not going to sell it.
I think I need one more try. Okay. So, originally, if you recall, we had the menu that was dropping off the top. We had multi-display, multi-window interface.
Zoom, right?
This is Zoom. And you can see that if I will run the same application, let me bring it on. So now you see we have five columns. If I will switch, for example, to desktop, I have slightly different metrics on the desktop because the containers don't have to be that big. So we have, I think six, and we have additional functionality there. And if we'll go to iPad, we have four columns because otherwise it won't fit. But now we have three full rows, and you will have to scroll up and down if you need to get further. As you go to different form factors, you can forget about drop-downs, data grids, or anything. You have to lay out everything according to the screen sizes. Interesting thing is that people are not really good with data grids because information is very narrow and it goes from left to right. You really have to follow it. You are much better off with... Oops. What's going on? I think this network disconnects you as soon as
possible.
In other words, that's the reason why I will switch back to... Okay. So that was the previous grid. Right now you have that many items in desktop. Let's see. Just 3 columns on iPad and 4 columns on Zoom. There is absolutely no way that you would be able to come up with all the styling for all types of devices that you're going to deploy to. However, in order for you to automatically adjust to those devices, what you really have to do is you have to start using layout managers. Let's go to... I will go on the desktop.
No touching there. Come on. He's poor.
That's great when the data set is limited, but what about caching issues and things like that? If you're going to be working with a really large data grid, then there's a lot of advantages, aren't there?
You will have some widgets that are going to be back office specific. But you're never going to send an agent to a field. And again, you have to realize that this is prosumers and consumer market that we are after. And even if we're talking about enterprises, the UI is going to be the same. If you have more space on the UI and you recognize that, you can decide what you want to do with this. For example, here I have plenty of space for the mail address. Let's try to do the same thing here. My favorite iPad. Working through the keyhole. Is it going to work? I didn't press it. Okay, so it's loading data. I'm sorry, just doing it through my phone because... Oh, come on. Loading data. Okay. So, I do not really have enough space to... It's still loading data, okay. So, let's say... Do you see what is happening here? Here all the items are straight, right? If you carefully look, you will see that it kind of bends, like 3D, like carousel. So whatever you have in here, in the middle side, is going to be real size, ready to do data entry. Whatever is going to be on the side is going to get skewed. Pretty much you're going to look at portfolio that is going to bend. Either by, let's say, if you're going to this side, you see this part kind of turned around, or if you'll go to this element, this part turned around. So essentially, it's like in Matrix. There are reality rules, but they can be bent. Some of them can be broken. You have just to get used to it.
Is that your component or is that Adobe?
There is no way to tell. In terms of...
Did you customize it to make it do that? Or is that built into the iPad?
Okay. Let me tell you what is going to be helpful for you.
Okay.
He's avoiding
because you can grab these components or our components, it doesn't really matter. But what is going to be in October release of this SDK framework is going to be an additional list layout that snaps to the item, so there are no differences. In other words, it has much better handling of the surrounding space, it will adjust to them. And it's pretty much like date control when it shows different dates and the last items are skewed. So you'll be able to use that layout for type of the controls like this, and that's probably the only one you want to use.
What was it for?
It's scrollable list container or something like that. It's going to be available, I think, in September in beta release, but the final release is going to be in October. So I didn't go through those controls, but you can either get third-party components today or switch to another component in 2 months.
You know, if I like these radio buttons, they're huge. To pay attention to radio buttons on the top, for example.
Yeah, I used Jakob's fingers too.
Yeah.
Just kidding. But basically, these are standard skins, and you have to realize that the layout managers are going to do 99% of the work for you. You will have to provide some custom skins to better manage real estate and better manage touch and attention of the users, because when they have intensive UI...
Show this on the screen.
Which one? I'm getting lost with this. So for Android platform, when it comes, it's close. You still need to probably scroll it up a little bit. But essentially, it's using all the real estate, but it doesn't have to curve. On iPod, it has to curve. But other than that, it's the same exact application running on three devices. We saw it on desktop. Interesting enough, you can run it on the browser too, obviously. So, what has changed? First of all, you can see that the items that are on the screen, like tabs and other things, they are from mobile components. What it really means is that they're not a part of the Flex framework, per se, for desktop. What it means is that you can include these mobile components to the list of the libraries for the desktop, and then all of a sudden you will find a number of errors related to the fact that these components have been added, but their skins, their theme, is not a part of the standard distribution for the Flex framework. They're available in source for mobile. You have to push them to the desktop. So what we did, we created uniform skins for desktop and mobile applications. What it means is that exactly the same components, whatever you can develop in mobile framework, can be executed on web. And it's not bad for web application UI-wise. Going forward, when you have more touch devices and you have touch-enabled interfaces, it becomes better and better. Pretty much you're getting modern-looking application before Lion had been released with exactly the same UI. So that was one thing. Second thing is that once you develop this application, you start to realize that you have capabilities that you didn't have before. For example, what was it?
This visual screen.
Hmm?
People don't see.
For example, the... Hey, computer, come back. I'm here. Okay. For example, when we were doing signature capturing here, and I apologize for the delay because of the data retrieval. Come on. Okay. It's still loading data for the PDFs and stuff. We had to rely on the scanner available in the office, and we would get a really ugly looking signature capturing. Sometimes they would come along as too light, you would have to use Pixel Bender and other technologies in order to enhance it so it looks okay for printing. When you're switching to these types of the devices, you still I will use Android because iPad is not liking me today. I'm not really sure why. So let's say I don't want to use the capturing. Now I can use just writing here. Say done. And now I have signature page. This is PDF. Still has old signature page because it was. I'm sorry. Let me erase it. Apparently, I'm not the person who has done a lot of testing personally, so I'm not really sure if I know how to use it. But I wanted to bring to your attention something else. Okay, so it worked the second time. Apparently, I hit cancel button way too early. Didn't have enough patience. As you can see, you have PDF. Or do you? One thing to know about mobile is that whatever you have on mobile is scaled-down version of everything, which is not really the real thing. For example, for PDF, there is no guarantee that you'll have Adobe product there. I don't think there is Adobe Acrobat on iPad because Apple using their own version of Reader. At best, you will get Acrobat 7 version without forms, without JavaScript, without anything. That is not guaranteed to work for anything that above Acrobat 4 level.
There's, like you mentioned, there's out-of-the-box, Apple support out-of-the-box PDF, but they not support these forms and stuff like that, so you need to install software.
Right, but there is no... If you read carefully Apple license, you cannot have interpreted languages outside of the Safari, so there is no way you'll have JavaScript in any languages. There is no way to support Acrobat 8 or higher without JavaScript. So these products cannot exist. So what we are doing, we are converting on the server the files to SWIFTs. In other words, PDFs are being converted to SWIFT files. If you remember 5 years ago, there was a product called Flash Paper that got discontinued after Adobe bought Macromedia. It was a competing product to Acrobat. So there are community-based open source projects that kind of allow you to do the same things. You can convert almost any type of the document, JPEG, Word, PDF to SWIFT file and create the presentation that you can run in the Flash player or you can run in the Air application. So, let me get back. I apologize, this is just the connection. Good thing we're not running in the browser, because loading would be even more interesting. Let me finish something that I started. So, we created the uniform skins that allow you to have mobile components on the web. We also extended mobile skins to include some web components, for example, things that people are getting used to, like modules. What Victor was talking about, like each endeavor function can be wrapped as an action, we are adding similar functionality to the mobile toolkit, so you can call screens and smaller components pretty much like modules, and you're supporting Android and more modular application development there. So it's the case where by using those skins, those themes, you will get the best of both worlds without losing any functionality and without breaking any functionality that you might have had in the web environment. So it's two-way street. And if on the top of that you will merge to the theme the replacement of the components by providing you with the theme that allows you to deploy a different look and feel on iOS and on Android, you can get all the bases covered. And it's a pretty straightforward procedure. You just link additional SWIG file and you modify default CSS any way you want to get the controls and look and feel that you want for each particular platform. So nothing more difficult than CSS and a couple of sleepless nights. In terms of the forms, let me get to the forms. Can we get to the same form here? So let's say I... let's say I want to erase this void check, and instead of that I want to enter information. You can see that it uses my new signature, and you can see that we have kind of refilled Acrobat form. Essentially what is happening in the background, you can do multiple things. First of all, you can take the PDF file and convert it to the skin, to the component. And you can, in interpreted mode, have additional components placed on the top of that skin. That's what we are doing right now here. Or you can create PDF form with the fields. The reason why we are doing skin approach, because that thing would also... it's still waiting. Mm-hmm. Work on the... I think we have concurrency issue. Let's try to do it again. We have concurrency issue. Nobody ever tried to do it in the same time. But instead of using, the scanner...
You took a picture of his belly just now.
No, that was front, not front-facing camera. Was it?
It's not a face.
It's not my
face. It's not a face.
Okay.
You will use that device.
Okay, let me use.
And project it on the screen.
Use camera to make
no, hold snapshot.
Make snapshot.
Yeah, good.
Smile.
Say cheese.
I'm not sure if it's gonna... Am I gonna hit it or not?
Use your finger.
Yeah, I'm trying to. So it created... It uploaded image, it placed it on the screen. Eventually you'll get the form with everything. So you can use not only the voice capabilities, but scan capabilities.
And everything else.
I put it, I think, in the tray in advance. Let me start it again. Okay. So the whole process changes. In other words, you're doing think very differently. And even if you are stuck with the devices in your office that require you to use the desktop, let's say you go to signature image, you say import.
Changing.
That's the next device we have to automate.
Read your mind. Should read your mind.
I think that is an easy part. So if I will use a different IP address, let's see if I'm luckier than Victor in that sense. No, I'm not, because I cannot. Okay, what had happened on this device? I got the request. I will try to do something else, like new. Done. And now I've got a different signature. So you can send the request to any device that you want, any place you want on the network, and essentially you're getting to the point when you realize that your different form factors are not really a disadvantage, but you can distribute functions to different devices, to different platforms, and you have to do it transparently. In other words, you never know what device you will have at the end user side. Hopefully you'll bring enough gadgets with you, but apparently I was debugging some stuff. Yeah, wrong one.
Anatoly is finishing his presentation. Next comes Victor. We'll have a break for 15 minutes. How much time do you need?
How much time? Okay, 8 minutes.
All right, so in 8 minutes we'll have a break. By the way, I never announced that after the presentation, we usually go downstairs, there's a bar next door, and we are buying beer, so if anybody wants to join us, we are going straight down. When you leave the building, the door is it's right next door.
He'll be leading the way, I know that. So, let's say, what do you do if you don't have Android? Or if you, for whatever reason, don't want to use the networking approach that Victor was describing? Let me go with you. Okay. Options. You have, you can have a standard communication model, which is based on client-server request to remote server. So what it would mean is that these devices would talk to some server and then come back, hopefully a few minutes later with the results, and they will show on a different device with a standard messaging. Why I say a few minutes later? Because the amount of data that can travel can include pictures, can include additional information. So we're talking about mass amount of information being exchanged in normal applications in the field. Other approach is to have point-to-point on local network. Like right now, I have phone and couple of devices. And let's say I will start a simple application. Let me start application called... Voice recording was the name. Voice recognition. Okay. MP. Okay. I probably have to start it from Flex Builder. So, and let's check the identity. Okay, it shows 2 MAX on the network already. Let's see if I can run the same application from this device and from this device. And from this device. Oh, come on, wake up. Okay, so as more devices are coming along, you can see that they joined local network even though there is no server by the magic of something called RTMFP, which was created by Adobe to facilitate games on the floors after the hours in the offices, and essentially to be able to distribute data more efficiently by using connection abilities of different flash clients to move data along and reduce the load on the server. So essentially, you have UDP or TCP/IP multicast capabilities allowing you to send data in either unsecured mode if you are using just standard groups, or if you are connected to the server, you can get secured mode and get AS 128 encryption from media server or from Cirrus servers by Adobe, which would be fixed expense. So what it actually means is that you can send any information even without a server between multiple devices, and you don't need additional hardware, software. It's going to be available on all devices regardless of the platform. What does it mean for you? For example, we're doing the same scanning task. Let me take iPad. Actually, iPad is known for not showing on the screen. What am I showing? Okay. Let's say I'm going to take Android. And let's say I want to scan a page of paper. Not sure what it is. It doesn't really matter.
All passwords for the network.
All passwords for the network, okay.
And send it to the host on this floor.
So I've got the image and it's 600 kilobytes. I don't need that quality, even though I wouldn't call it. But what if we'll apply compression to it? Again, this is low power device and we're not using both CPUs, we're using just one. If you want, grab me when I drink enough beer, you can see the G tablet was really busy. But you can see that we reduce the size of the image all the way to 10%, so it's much less information to be sent for receipts or
we
other
reduce
information.
90%, actually.
I'm sorry?
We reduce 90%.
To 10%. Okay.
It's 61K. You see, original was 636 kilobyte, and then the compressed side is 61,996.
And that's approximately equivalent of 300 dpi for normal documents with this kind of compression. And this is what I told you about iPhone devices. They go to sleep and they disappear completely in no time. If you'll take a look, it was on another machine. So basically what it allows you to do, it allows you to either do the processing locally or shift the processing to the whatever processor you want to use it for. But you can get any functionality that, okay, iPad goes to sleep. You actually have to see it. Depending on the type of iOS device, it will go to sleep anywhere between 20 seconds to all the way to about a minute. So right now you can see that I woke up iPad, but iPhone is gone for a while.
It's like a single man orchestra, right? Look at what he's doing. Just think about it.
Nice.
Good job on it.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so you can have also mesh of server to point to point. You will need zeros to zero version. Essentially, in this case, you will authorize just one node on your local network, and all the devices within that group will talk to each other using secured protocol. But the communications are pretty much free. You have tethering on pretty much every device available at this point. Even though starting today, AT&T is going to charge extra $15 because even on jailbroken phones. So with bandwidth growing at approximately 70% in terms of the speed every year, and reaching about 50 megabytes by 2020, chances are that this kind of solutions will be everywhere. There is one more demo. If I don't want to use Android, you still can use a number of devices, for example. Let's see if this is going to work.
Guys, can you guess what it is?
I can.
What?
Four square. It's a square.
Right. It's a scanner for the credit card that you can put in the iPhone.
Not iPhone. Android. Okay, you put it. Okay, I'm trying to find. Okay, let me. What application am I running? Okay, let me. There are too many ways to do it. So let's say I'm running a scanner application on the desktop, but I do not really want, I don't have camera that is good enough. So let's say I'm going to use this one. And obviously this device went to sleep as well. If it won't wake up, okay, let me show you what I meant. On this device I was doing some photo shooting today for demo. So let's see. That was taking a few minutes. Okay. And this is debugging version. And you can see that the same image finally in the corner is coming from the camera directly over the
network. This is a special card. Do you know about these cards for the pictures? You put it in the phone, it's called MiFi. And it automatically transmits the picture to your computer. Is this what you have?
Right. So basically, apparently there was the debugging code someplace, but assuming that everything is well, which apparently it's not. Let me run voice recognition IP twice. The same type of things is not limited to the desktops or mobile devices. What you can do, you can pretty much get the same information from any network device. So let's see if it's gonna bring the image. That was a good shot. And it will go into your application. You'll be able to do image processing, anything that you want to, without any wires. So the number of devices that are going to be... Oh, come on. It works much faster with low-resolution camera. I'm not really sure why it's not taking it, but I'm sure that it's already on the disk. So we can just... Okay. There are some... There were some problems related to the breakpoints in the application, but you can do the same image processing, turn it into black and white, do image processing, or do anything you want. And by using high CPU, chances are you will get better quality of the pictures and everything else. The number of devices that are going to be local network enabled, one way or another, is growing exponentially. So, medical devices, cross-integrated devices that have base of PC and Android, detachable tablets, medical devices. You see applications popping up every day. So, I hope I'm out of time.
Yes, you are.
Okay.
Do you have any questions, or you're tired? No.
Come on, it wasn't that scary.
Okay, so we have 10-minute break and then final presentation for today.